All right, everyone, get ready for today's deep dive. We're taking a look at a case that's all about government power. You know, when they can demand all your documents. Imagine, you get a letter and it says you have to hand over your files, your business records.
Maybe even your diary.
Yeah, to a government agency, no questions asked. Kind of unsettling, isn't it?
It can be, yeah. A case from 1946.
Oh, wow.
Oklahoma Press Publishing Company versus Walling. This case, it's still the basis, the bedrock, for how these, we call them administrative subpoenas, work today.
Oklahoma Press Publishing versus Walling doesn't exactly sound like a thriller, but I have a feeling there's more to it.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot going on under the surface. Mm-hmm. It's about this clash between freedom of the press and also the government's power, the ability to enforce laws. And in this case, it's labor laws.
Okay.
We're talking about the Fair Labor Standards Act. Back then, that was pretty new.
All right, so set the scene for us. What happened?
Well, the government, they wanted to make sure that these newspaper publishers, they were complying with the Fair Labor Standards Act. You know, things like paying fair wages and ensuring reasonable working conditions, all that stuff. But to do that, they needed info.
Mm-hmm.
So they issued subpoenas demanding these publishers hand over their records.
Makes sense, right? You got to make sure everyone's playing by the rules.
You'd think so. But the publishers, oh, they pushed back. They argued that, look, the Fair Labor Standards Act doesn't even apply to us. This whole thing, demanding our records, it's a violation of our First Amendment rights.
Ooh, a First Amendment showdown.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we got this, like, power struggle. Who gives in?
Things got pretty intense. Lower courts, they were divided. Some siding with the government, some siding with the publishers. It was a real mess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the Supreme Court stepped in, had to settle this whole thing.
Okay, this is where things get interesting. What'd the Supreme Court have to say?
Here's where it gets juicy. The court's decision, it had these long-lasting consequences. They gave administrative agencies, like, a surprising amount of leeway. They basically said, look, you guys, agencies, you don't need a judge to confirm that a law applies before you can issue a subpoena.
Hold on. So the government can just start demanding documents, your documents, without even proving that you've done anything wrong.
That's right.
That seems like a lot of power.
That was the fear of Justice Murphy, actually. He wrote this really strong dissent, saw this as a potential slippery slope. He thought it could lead to government overreach, you know, agencies bullying people and businesses into handing over sensitive information.
I see his point.
Yeah.
Okay, so Justice Murphy's kind of waving a red flag here. But what about the majority? Like, why did they side with the government? Did they at all address these concerns about, you know, the government overreaching?
The majority, they took a more pragmatic approach. They emphasized this need for efficiency in investigations. Oh. They argued that demanding documents, it's not the same as, you know, barging into someone's home.
Yeah.
So the bar for what's considered reasonable, it should be lower for these administrative subpoenas.
So it sounds like they're trying to find this balance, right? Trying to protect individual rights while giving agencies the tools they need to do their jobs. Did they create any guidelines, though, for when a subpoena is reasonable?
They did. They created this thing, we call it the three-part test for administrative subpoenas.
Ah, yes, the three-part test. Every law student's favorite. Can you break it down for us, though?
Sure. It's really pretty straightforward. To be considered valid, a subpoena has to meet three criteria. First, it has to be authorized, allowed by a law, you know, passed by Congress. Second, it has to serve a real purpose, like enforcing those wage and hour laws we were talking about.
Yeah.
And then finally, the documents they're requesting, they have to be relevant to that purpose.
Okay, so it's not just a total free-for-all. There are some limits. But I am curious, they don't have to actually prove that someone's breaking the law at this point. They just have to say the information is relevant to a possible investigation.
Exactly. And that's what worried Justice Murphy. He thought that gave agencies too much power to kind of go on these fishing expeditions. Like, they could just harass people and businesses, even if there's really no evidence that anyone's doing anything wrong.
I see why he'd be concerned about that. What about the publisher's argument that this was violating their First Amendment rights, you know, freedom of the press? That's a pretty big deal.
Huge. And they argued that applying these labor laws to the press, you know, it limited their freedom to report the news.
Uh-huh.
But the court disagreed, basically said the press doesn't get special treatment. Everyone has to follow the law.
So no First Amendment shield for the publishers. What really stands out to you about the majority's reasoning in this case?
I think it really highlights this, like, this fundamental tension that we have in administrative law. It's this balance between making sure the law is enforced and that things are efficient, and also safeguarding individual liberties.
Yeah.
The majority, You know, they were really concerned with giving agencies the tools they needed to do their jobs well.
Yeah.
But like Justice Murphy pointed out, there's a real risk that power can be abused.
That is the issue, isn't it? Finding that sweet spot where we can make sure that we have effective regulations without sacrificing our basic rights.
Exactly. And what makes this case even more interesting is that it's not just about newspapers, you know, back in the 1940s. It set a precedent that still affects all of us. Like, think about agencies, the EPA or the SEC. They can issue these subpoenas without proving first that they have jurisdiction, all thanks to Oklahoma Press Publishing.
So this one case about newspapers and wage laws has implications for all sorts of investigations today.
That's pretty wild.
Okay, so we're back and we're going to continue to unpack the long-lasting impact of Oklahoma Press Publishing. And I think one thing that really stands out is, you know, we left off talking about how this case gave agencies pretty broad subpoena powers. But the world has changed a lot since 1946.
Oh, yeah. Back then, you know, we're talking about paper trails, file cabinets, all that. Now it's emails, texts, online shopping, social media. Like, our whole digital lives are out there.
And that makes you wonder how Oklahoma Press Publishing applies to all that. Like, if an agency can just demand to see your whole digital footprint, like, where do we draw the line? What about really sensitive personal information? You know, browsing history, online conversations.
Even location data.
Exactly.
That is the big question. And it's something courts are trying to figure out right now. Like, how do we apply those legal frameworks that seem so simple, like the three-part test, to the massive amount of data that we generate today?
It's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. You know, the basic idea might be the same, but the world around it is totally different. Like, demanding someone's whole email server is not the same as asking for a couple of paper files.
Totally. And privacy advocates, they're really worried about this. They're saying these demands for digital information are basically like fishing expeditions, and they think it violates our Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable searches.
So how do we balance the need for these investigations with protecting everyone's digital privacy?
It's a tough one. Courts are always trying to find that middle ground. They're weighing, on the one hand, the government's interest in investigating potential wrongdoing, and on the other hand, the individual's right to privacy.
So there's no easy answer.
Nope. It's all about the specifics of each case. You got to look at the facts, the kind of information they're looking for, and what it means for privacy. It's complicated.
Got it. Can you give us an example of how this might actually work? You know, something our listeners can really relate to.
Sure. Let's say the EPA is investigating a company. They think the company's violating some environmental regulations. In the past, they might have just subpoenaed, like, records about how they dispose of waste, right?
Makes sense.
But now, they might demand to see the company's entire email server.
Whoa!
And they would say, well, there might be important communications about this hidden somewhere in those emails.
That sounds like a huge invasion of privacy. Would a court really allow that?
It's hard to say. Because on the one hand, the EPA does need to make sure companies are following environmental laws, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, looking at every single email could expose a lot of private stuff that has nothing to do with the investigation.
So how do courts even begin to decide these cases? What are they looking for when they're trying to decide if a subpoena for digital information goes too far?
One really important thing is relevance. Remember that three-part test from Oklahoma Press Publishing?
Right.
Well, figuring out what's relevant in the digital age, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, because with so much digital information, almost anything could seem relevant if you look hard enough. It's like saying, well, maybe there's a clue about environmental violations in this employee's online shopping history, you know?
Exactly. And that's the worry. Courts have to be very careful. They're starting to demand a lot more specifics from agencies. It's not enough to just say, we need all this data, it might be relevant. They have to clearly explain how the information they're asking for is connected to their investigation.
So they can't just go on a fishing expedition.
Right. And courts are also looking at whether there are other ways to get the information. Like, could the agency get what they need without demanding all this digital data?
Like, what if they just requested specific files or did interviews or focused on a smaller set of emails?
Exactly. But of course, it really depends on the investigation and how serious the alleged wrongdoing is. Sometimes, you know, looking at a lot of data might be necessary.
This is complicated. I bet our listeners are starting to really understand why this is a tough issue. Maybe we should try to sum up some of the key takeaways about Oklahoma Press Publishing so far.
Good idea. So, main takeaway. Oklahoma Press Publishing showed that agencies have broad powers to ask for information, and they don't have to prove someone's done anything wrong before asking. But there's that three-part test. Subpoenas have to be lawful, they got to have a purpose, and the information they're asking for has to be relevant. The problem is, applying that test in this digital age is a whole new challenge, especially when it comes to what relevant even means and how to protect people's privacy when the government's asking for so much data.
It's like they set the rules a long time ago, but now we're trying to make those rules work in a world where everything is digital.
That's pretty fascinating. It shows how law is always changing to keep up with the times.
For sure. And for all you future lawyers out there, it's not enough to just know the rules. You have to think about how they work in the real world, which is always changing.
You have to be able to think critically about these issues. Absolutely. And cases like Oklahoma Press Publishing, they're perfect examples of that. They force us to think about the balance of power between the government and the individual and how to make sure that we're protecting everyone's rights.
Okay, so let's wrap up our deep dive into Oklahoma Press Publishing Company versus Walling. We've gone over the historical context, the Supreme Court's decision, what Justice Murphy had to say, and even how this case from way back in 1946 still affects our digital lives today.
It's amazing how relevant it still is. Now, I want to zero in on some of the key legal ideas behind this case. You know, the concepts that any aspiring lawyer should really understand.
Okay, law students, listen up. Let's break it down.
All right, first we've got this concept. It's called a subpoena duces tecum. It's basically a legal order that makes someone, forces them to produce documents or other physical evidence. Agencies use this tool, it's pretty powerful, to get information during investigations.
So it's not like a search warrant where they just barge into your office and start going through everything.
Exactly. Subpoenas are less intrusive. They're just a request for records. But as we've talked about, that doesn't mean there aren't issues, especially when those records have sensitive personal information. And, you know, that's something that Justice Murphy was really concerned about in his dissent.
Yeah, he was worried about agencies potentially abusing this power, right? Like using it to intimidate people or going on these fishing expeditions without any real reason.
Right. He thought that making agencies get a judge's approval before issuing a subpoena, that would help keep them in check.
That makes sense. You know, the publishers in Oklahoma Press Publishing tried to argue that if they handed over their records, that would violate their Fifth Amendment rights, you know, the right against self-incrimination. Did that argument work?
It didn't. The court said that the Fifth Amendment's protection, it applies to individuals, to people, not corporations.
Hmm.
So since the publishers were companies, not individual people, that argument didn't hold up.
So there's this really important difference between personal liability and corporate liability. It seems like understanding those little details is really key in this area of law.
Oh, absolutely. It shows how important it is to understand constitutional law, how all the different parts work together.
So we've covered subpoenas duces tecum and talked about the Fifth Amendment. What other legal concepts are important for understanding Oklahoma Press Publishing?
One that comes to mind is this idea of the grand jury analogy. The court in this case, they compared administrative agencies doing investigations to grand juries investigating potential crimes.
Interesting. How does that comparison work?
Well, you know, grand juries have a lot of power to subpoena witnesses and documents.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of how they figure out the facts of a case. And they don't have to prove that a crime's been committed before they can start asking questions.
Uh-huh.
So the court in Oklahoma Press Publishing saw agencies as having a similar role, but in the administrative world. They're gathering information to see if a law's been broken.
So agencies are kind of like the detectives of the regulatory world. They're building a case before they decide if they need to take action. But grand juries have all these rules they're overseeing. Do agencies have that same level of accountability? Justice Murphy didn't seem to think so.
That's a great point. And it's where things get really interesting. The majority on the court, they stressed how important it is for agencies to have some independence, some flexibility to do their jobs well.
Right, but doesn't that flexibility also open the bar for them to abuse their power? Where's the line between efficiency and protecting individual rights?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's at the heart of so many discussions about administrative law. And this is where the Fourth Amendment comes in, with its protection against unreasonable searches and seizures.
We talked about how administrative subpoenas are generally not as intrusive as search warrants, but they still have to be reasonable, right?
Absolutely. The court in Oklahoma Press Publishing made it clear that the Fourth Amendment's reasonableness requirement, it applies to these administrative subpoenas. But they also said that the standard for what's reasonable might be different in this context.
Okay, break that down for us. What does that mean practically?
It means that agencies don't have to meet the same high standard as like law enforcement would when they're trying to get a warrant. Right. They don't have to prove that a crime has definitely happened, that there's probable cause. What they do need to show that the subpoena is connected to a legitimate investigation and that the request isn't too broad or burdensome.
So again, it's about finding that balance, weighing the government's interest in investigating possible wrongdoing with the individual's right to privacy and to be protected from unreasonable intrusions.
Exactly. And try to balance those interests. It gets even more complicated in our digital world, where the amount of information that can be requested is so much bigger.
Right. So it's like Oklahoma Press Publishing laid the foundation, but now courts are always having to figure out how to apply these principles in a world where technology is changing everything.
It's a really dynamic area of law, for sure. And as future lawyers, these are the kinds of questions you'll be dealing with.
Well, I think we've covered pretty much everything about Oklahoma Press Publishing Company versus Walling. It's been a fascinating look into this case and how it's still shaping the legal landscape today.
It's incredible how a case from so long ago can still teach us so much.
Any final words of wisdom for our listeners before we wrap up?
Just remember, as you're learning about the law, administrative law is really powerful, but it's also complex. It gives agencies a lot of authority to investigate and enforce regulations, but they also have to operate within the limits of the Constitution.
Hmm.
Keep that tension in mind and always remember that the law is constantly evolving to meet the challenges of a changing world.
That's a great point to end on. Thanks for guiding us through this deep dive, and thanks to all of you for listening.
It's been my pleasure. Till next time, keep learning and stay curious.